Good evening, all you slatterners, headbangers, heathens, and heretics. My name is Jerome Reuter, and I welcome you to another episode of Metal Storm. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about Metallica. To be more specific, we're talking about Master of Puppets. This is the height of their quality. Not their commercial success, but this is definitely the height of their quality. If you go through just about any mainstream publication, such as like Revolver, or any, you know, or Metal Edge when they're around, or Metal Maniacs, RIP, and you get a list of, you know, what are the top 20 or 50 most influential albums of metal, this and Rain and Blood are always tied for first and second place. And there's a reason for that. Those two albums, I think more than anything, really established for what the concrete formula for a metal album would be. As for Metallica themselves, I think the best term to describe them is polarizing. Because the Metallica that exists today and the Metallica that existed during the release of Master of Puppets, comparing the two is difficult because they are two completely different bands. James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, with a lead guitar player named Dave Mustaine and bass player Ron McGovney, they release a demo tape called No Life Till Leather. And holy shit, does this rock the underground. Of course, you know, Lars, huge devotee of Diamond Head, Dave Mustaine, huge fan of Venom and Iron Maiden, and there's a bit of Motorhead thrown in there as well, and so it's the new wave of British heavy metal. It's that sound injected with PCP. They go through a few lineup changes. Ron McGovney leaves, and they get bass virtuoso Cliff Burton. Dave Mustaine is kicked out very infamously. He goes off to form a band called Megadeth. Gee, I wonder whatever happened to them. We'll have to find out. They basically set the world on fire, pardon my Megadeth pun, in 83 with Kill 'Em All. That same year, speaking of the references, or the statement earlier in regards to Slayer and Metallica, Slayer take Venom, Judas Priest, you know, just inject it with this raw ferocity that, you know, punk had from, you know, bands like DRI. And these two bands are really going to establish what thrash metal is early on. They're going to set the standard that a million bands, at least, have tried to emulate. As for Metallica themselves, after Kill 'Em All, of course, they released Ride the Lightning. And this is their first of three collaborations with Danish producer Flemming Rasmussen. Incredible album. And it kind of almost sets up the same formula that we're going to see on Master of Puppets. You have the quiet melody in the beginning before things go balls to the wall with Fight Fire with Fire. You've got the melancholy number, Fade to Black, which, of course, on Master of Puppets, we're going to have Sanitarium, and that's the end of Side 1. We're going to have a jaw-dropping instrumental. On Lightning, of course, it was the Call of Cthulhu. And people, while people do complain about Jason Newsted's bass being buried on the Justice album, the bass solo Cliff Burton plays on Call of Cthulhu has been buried so much that it's just ridiculous. It's sad. Good God, what a number. A Master of Puppets. So, it's 1986. This is the coming out year for thrash. This year, it's going to be Puppets on one side, Rain and Blood, like I mentioned before, on the other. And nothing is going to be the same after this. So before we enter the world of hypnotizing power, the Metallica that exists post-Puppets, you could fill an entire blog of different takes from people on what they think of what Metallica eventually evolved into. Some will tell you that they sacrificed their integrity and just basically went out for commercial success. Others will say they've continued to put out good releases. Case in point, I was in high school when the Load and Reload albums came out, and that's about when I stopped listening. But I remember I had a friend back in high school who was literally obsessed with both those albums, thought they were great. As a matter of fact, he had heard those albums and was surprised when I showed him an album called Kill 'Em All. So there you go. With Puppets, especially Ride the Lightning as well, you know, we're going to see James Hetfield knows how to write a hook. He knows how to write songs that are catchy. So there was always sort of a pop element to them. He starts writing introspective songs on And Justice for All with Dyer's Eve, and he really taps into that vein as things go on. And as we've seen over the years, you know, he's a very prolific songwriter. And what makes Master of Puppets such a unique album, this is them at their most angry. I think it was 2 years ago, Shamir from Destruction said that James Hetfield couldn't be angry anymore because he was a millionaire. Certainly shows. Master of Puppets is an album about war and control and power. Of course, that's going to carry on into And Justice for All, which is also going to be about control, but a different type of control. And that classic album cover is so wonderfully bleak. The red sky, the crosses in the graveyard, one which has a helmet on it, and you just see these two hands up above, pulling the strings and just maintaining control even after death. And I still remember seeing this album cover on my sister's shirt when I was like about 8 years old. I don't want to say I was traumatized, but it definitely caught my eye, and I'll tell you why. For the life of me, I can't name this movie. And if anyone listening to this can tell me, you know, sound off in the comment section, you know, shoot me a message if you're connected with me on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I remember there was a movie that, a cartoon, an animated movie that got played when I was around, I want to say like I was about 5 or 6 when I saw it, and there's a scene where there's a character with a flute, and he says that, he remarks that he's going to turn all of his people into puppets. And he goes to these houses in this medieval village, and he plays a few notes on his flute, and the people, they turn into these block-like creatures, and they just fall over, they collapse. And they sort of bear a slight resemblance to the crosses you see on the Puppets album, so I remember seeing that, and that was the first thing that came to my mind. Metallica are going to touch around on this album, they're going to touch upon some very unique subject matter for them. They're going to be talking about war, drug addiction, religion. They're even going to touch base on Lovecraft. And, of course, there is the Call of Cthulhu, which is the instrumental, but this is the first time where James is going to start writing about the metaphysical. Of course, there is a bit of a tragedy with Master of Puppets as well. If you dig up the Cliff Hamall VHS tape, which is also available on YouTube, and you listen to this album, and you watch the footage from this tour when they were opening it for Ozzy, and it is kind of, it's impossible to watch and not have it in the back of your head that this is the last the world is going to hear from Cliff Burton. Just like Roger Patterson from Atheist, someone who is taken from us far too soon. And that is how you open up an album. Battery. Once again, Metallica are using a similar formula to what they did with Fight Fire with Fire off Ride the Lightning, and holy shit. Battery establishes the war theme that's going to be very strong on the album. But more than that, Battery can also be seen as a declarative statement from the band themselves. At this point, 1986, they are crushing all that cower. No better way up to open such an incredible album than with Battery. Another thing I'll say about this album, more specifically about Kirk Hammett, is I've never been a huge fan of Kirk Hammett as a lead guitarist. I've always felt his leads were kind of stale. They might have fit when he was in Exodus, but I've never been a huge fan of his playing. This is just my personal theory. I've always felt that Kirk Hammett got the job as lead guitarist not because of his technical proficiency, but because he's not going to step up to James. He's the badass in the room, and as we found out later with when Jason Newsted departed, you know, James is kind of a control freak, and I think that, you know, Kirk was brought in because he wouldn't step up to Hetfield. This is Kirk's best lead playing. His leads have always had melody, but they're just perfect the way they flow with the songs. The guitar solo he does on Battery, the one he does on Leopard Messiah and Disposable Heroes, and the incredible lead on Master of Puppets, especially. This is seriously his best work. You cannot take anything away from Hammett's contribution on this album.
Master of
master of puppets. As far as Metallica's songs go, this one is instantly recognizable. More importantly, there's always talk of how Metallica went commercial in the 1990s, and they sacrificed their integrity, which they did to some extent, I'm not going to deny that. But when you really listen to this song, and Ride the Lightning in particular, you see that they're kind of setting themselves up to write material that's more commercial. The most important part of any pop song is the hook. When you listen to the chorus for Puppets, that is such a large hook. No. Come crawling faster, obey your master. Master of puppets, pulling your strings, crushing your mind, twisting your dreams. Go back to Ride the Lightning. Flash before my eyes, now it's time to die. Hetfield was always writing big hooks. And Master of Puppets, as far as the subject matter, it's carrying over with the war theme. But this is a different type of warfare. This is the warfare of the human body. This is a song that embodies addiction. And I can't take credit for this point. I had a bass book when I was around 19. It was written by I believe it was James Rhoda. I believe that's his name. He plays for a band called Fireball Ministry, and he touched bass about, this is very subtly, and well, not so subtly, I should say, talking about the Agent Orange epidemic in Vietnam. But more importantly, it's, you know, about the control addiction has. I mean, when you think about it too, this is a very prophetic song considering later on, you know, James Hetfield himself will have several issues with chemical dependency and substance abuse that he's still battling. When you think about a lot of the commercial metal from the 1980s, you think decadence, you think excess, you know, you think Motley Crue partying and living it up, and it's kind of surprising that they're touching upon something like drug addiction and really being upfront about, you know, chop your breakfast on a mirror. You could not be more straight and to the point with that. I think by talking about the control, and you think back to the album cover, you think about the rows of crosses, you think about how addiction still holds you like a puppet master, and it's a brilliant song. The 1-2 punch of Battery and Puppets is just holy fuck. I remember listening to this album for the first time. After I heard Battery, I was like, holy crap, they can't get better than this. Master of Puppets comes on. Holy shit, it cannot get better than this. And you know what? It does get better than this. And in the next song, we're going to see just how good it gets. Strap yourselves in. We are going into the depths of madness. Hybrid children watch the sea. Pray. The Thing That Should Not Be. I would say this is one of the best songs Metallica ever wrote. And I'll tell you why. This is sort of ahead of its time. Now, I could be wrong on this front. I'm sure someone will tell me if I'm wrong. Around this time, you didn't really see a lot of metal bands writing about Lovecraft. You know, at the time, there was definitely, you know, the Satanic Panic, and people were hyping up the imagery. There weren't a lot of bands really tackling this subject matter. And as far as lyrical content and atmosphere, it's a winning combination. It's so perfect in its execution. You know, as you're listening to it, it really sucks you in. You can see, you know, the giant black towers, and, you know, you can feel the ancient ones lurking beneath the sea, waiting to rise and wreak havoc on humanity. One of the things that attracted me to Lovecraft was the loss of sanity. There's that great line in the song, drain you of your sanity, face the thing that should not be. But the way this song plays out, it's literally like a descent into madness. There's a reason why Master of Puppets has been in constant rotation in my albums for years and years and years. Because something like this is just perfect. I've always been disappointed that Metallica never tried to tread this area again. If you've ever owned the Live Shit Binge and Purge box set, they were playing it live during the And Justice for All tour, and the less said about the time they decided to play it with an orchestra, the better. If you listen to Dope Throne by Electric Wizard, there's sort of that same element. That element of using the music to create this kind of sphere where reality ceases to function. Something that's very noisy and abrasive that keeps the song intact. One of the best songs on the album. One of the best Metallica songs ever written. It's interesting, we go from the first two songs, which are about war and control. We go into the metaphysical. Just when you think things might shift back into high gear, we have one of the all-time classics of Metallica's discography right here. Welcome to Where Time Stands Still, No One Leaves and No One Will. Moon is full, never seems to change, just labeled mentally deranged. As far as recognizable Metallica songs are concerned, Sanitarium is easily up there with Master of Puppets. Sanitarium is kind of the equivalent of Fade to Black, as it's a slower number, appears on it's the last song on the first side of the album. Lyrics sort of reflect another form of control, and just this one being imprisonment. One of the things I've always noticed about this song in particular, when you really look at the lyrics and you visualize, one of the things you notice is that it sort of harkens back to the days of the state hospital. I grew up in Southern California, so the whole mental asylum, the whole state-run hospitals, the state-run hospital, I should say, that was something that was completely foreign. And when I moved to the East Coast over a decade ago, you know, I hear the stories of places like Danvers where they become warehouses of humanity. These people are just sent there if, you know, you're suffering any sort of mental illness. Going back up into, I believe it was like the mid-60s, lobotomy was still considered a viable solution to dealing with mental illness. And that's what I've always gotten from this song. It's just that whole, there's a lot of emotion in this song. As you're listening to it, you get the feeling of isolation, of wanting to be free, and condemnation that comes with being detained anywhere. It's an interesting 1-2 punch between The Thing That Should Not Be and Sanitarium. Because with The Thing That Should Not Be is like that descent into madness. Sanitarium is the repercussions or the ordeal one has because of a descent into madness. So in just one half of an album, we've gone from war to addiction to the metaphysics to isolation, gone to a place of imprisonment. And I think Metallica were definitely onto something with this album. You know, they were addressing different subjects. They weren't rehashing anything. They were certainly going for something new. And just when there's a lull between after these two songs that were The Thing That Should Not Be is obviously very heavy. Sanitarium is very melancholy and very atmospheric. And then we're going to flip the record, as it were, and we're going straight back onto the battlefield. Disposable Heroes. If there's one song on the album that easily reflects the cover art, Disposable Heroes has to be it. Not only does this carry on with the war theme that's very, very strong in this album, it really goes into control and this sort of apathy from the people who send others off to die in war. I mean, you think of the cover art, you think of the rows of crosses, you think of all these people who, even in death, are still under control and, you know, have no will of their own. And Disposable Heroes, I think, does a good job of representing that. If you really want to watch a really good live rendition of this song, on YouTube, there is footage from the Metal Hammer Fest in 1985, which also included Venom, which I would have killed to see this era of Metallica and Venom live. I mean, whew, imagine the devastation. But it's, I believe this was one of the first times they played the song live, and it's such a freaking kick to the face. Just an incredible song. The way just, as soon as, you know, you put side two on, Disposable Heroes is the first song on the second side of the album. Boom! And it just hits you. It has the same sort of feeling that you might think of when you think of, you know, Cavalry Charge. There's very few songs like this that have come close, you know. Possibly The Trooper by Iron Maiden and Behind the Crooked Cross by Slayer are sort of like in this same kind of vein. But as a song about control and people who possess no willpower of their own, it's just about perfect. As an anti-war song, it's one of the more stronger statements on the album. And of course, control is going to be explored in the next song, Leper Messiah. There's one thing that can be said about Metallica, especially during this time period, is they were really going against just about every trend imaginable. Of course, they got their start. When they started in L.A., they were very much opposed to the whole pop metal sound, because I hate the term hair metal. Using the term hair metal, I think, is just about as bad as saying something is so bad it's good. They never tried to play up the satanic imagery, which a lot of bands are doing. They stuck to writing about, you know, real subject matter, and Master of Puppets is the break from that. And Leper Messiah it's one of many songs that discusses the hypocrisy of religion in terms of the need for money. The televangelism movement of the 1980s, you could write a book on all the satires, parodies that came out during that time. It was the easiest thing in the world to take jabs at. These preachers who were just full of hubris and were nothing more than hypocrites. I think the Genesis song, Jesus, He Knows Me, hits the nail right in the head. There's a verse that goes, I believe in the family with my ever-loving wife beside me, but she doesn't know about my girlfriend or the man I met last night. So Metallica, you know, certainly not the first to take a jab at this. But it's interesting, too, because while it certainly attacks religion, it more attacks the followers. Especially with that open lyric, spineless from the start, sucked into the part, circus comes to town, you play the lead clown. It's definitely a predecessor to what we're going to see with The God That Failed on the Black album, Broken is the Trauma's Betrayal. And that all goes back to James Hetfield's upbringing as a Christian Scientist. So it's interesting, you know, while a lot of people were taking the road of, okay, let's make fun of these preachers, let's make fun of their need for money and the moral majority, this is actually, while it is attacking the Institute of Religion, you know, with lines like, send me money, send me green, heaven you will meet, make a contribution and you'll get a better seat. It's also doing a great job at attacking the followers as weak-willed people, following easy answers, the whole aspect of mass hypnosis. Not only is Master of Puppets the final album with Cliff Burton, Master of Puppets also contains the last high-quality instrumental that they'll put out, and that's Orion. There's an interlude on there that is often used, memorial packages for Cliff Burton's passing. And just to show like how it's a very influential, and you're following Master of Puppets, there's a band you might have heard of called Sepultura. They go thrash with their album Schizophrenia. And on that album, is a instrumental piece called Inquisition Symphony. And of course, it's really easy to connect the dots because Andreas Kisser is a huge Metallica fan, so you really see how that influence really spreads. We are approaching the final song of the album. A little number called Damage Inc. Damage Inc. sort of harkens back to the song Metal Militia off Kill 'Em All. Unrelenting speed, definitive statement of the band's intentions. Of course, if you go back to Metal Militia, it's through the mist and the madness we're trying to get the message to you. You know, Hetfield has the songwriting process a lot more refined in the 3 years since Kill 'Em All. Blood will follow blood, dying time is here. We chew and spit you out. We laugh, you scream and shout. And again, Kirk Hammett hits a solo in the song that perfectly coincides with it. Damage Inc. kind of, you know, has that little throwback to Kill 'Em All as far as a unrelenting song that is just balls to the wall. And you can look up footage on YouTube of the Damage Inc. tour. This is when Jason Newsted first got in the band. And listening to the album does not do this song or some of the other songs justice because they speed everything up. I mean, they're just... Except might have wrote the song Balls to the Wall, but Metallica on that tour, they were definitely balls to the wall. And that's how Master of Puppets concludes. The album went gold with almost no backing, which is a testament to how good of a band they were at this time. Of course, this high watermark, this triumph, is met with a tragedy. As we mentioned at the top of this podcast, Cliff Burton would die while the band was on tour over in Europe. They would regroup. In would come Jason Newsted, from formerly of Flotsam and Jetsam. They'd finish up the tour, and they have an EP of covers called Garage Days Revisited that came out in 87. That was before the And Justice album, but Garage Days is really the last excellent Metallica release. There's still some rage, there's still some testosterone flowing. They still have that feel and that aggressive thrash sound that made them such a great band to begin with. Justice is really where, I don't want to say the cracks start to form, but that's where things begin to change. That is the final contribution of Flaming Lips Music before the band starts working with Bob Rock in 1991. What a last hurrah that is. That's where the songs become more introspective. The songs get bogged down with technicality, so one of the things that makes Master of Puppets so great is because the songs are still complex. They're still, you know, incredible compositions, but they're not overcomplicated either. They're structured. Hetfield can take just a couple chords, make a riff that's going to stick with you. And that's how it ended. That Master of Puppets signified the end of the first era of Metallica, I guess you could say, or the second era, if you're not counting the No Life Till Leather days and the brief run they had and the run they had with Mustaine and McGovney. But that was it. And for what it's worth, Master of Puppets is a perfect album. I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've heard it probably many times. Go throw it on. Bang your head in the battery and Damage Inc. and Disposable Heroes and revel in an album that truly was a game changer in every sense of the word. I'm Jerome Reuter. Thank you for listening to Metal Storm. I'll catch you cats on the flip side.